The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Live and much to discuss as we welcome our next guest to the program. He is Reese Davis, of course, the host of College Game Day, heading to Lawrence. And we'll get to that in a second. Reese, thank you very much for joining us. I know everybody Saturday was concerned about Bryce Young, but us older folks were more concerned about Lee Corso. Can you give us an update on how Coach is doing?
He's doing much better, Paul. I talked to him on Sunday. He's back home in Orlando and feeling much, much better. He just woke up Saturday morning, had a little dizziness and so forth. But, they checked him out, and he was feeling better by Saturday afternoon and was really ready to go home quicker than they let him. But the great doctors at Clemson there took care of him, looked after him, and now he's back home in Orlando. And While I was talking to our producer, Jim Guerrero, the other day, LC was calling him and wanting to know what topics were in the show that he needed to prepare for. So, I think he's feeling much better, yeah.
Well, great news. You were with us a couple weeks ago, and they were upset in Lawrence with game day, the fact that you chose elsewhere. But now you've chosen Lawrence, so they've grown up and have welcomed the circus to town. Tell us about the decision and what you expect.
I mean, it's what everybody expected when you had Jimbo and Nick and the Deep South's oldest rivalry and LSU-Tennessee and the Red River rivalry. Well, of course you're going to TCU, Kansas. Why wouldn't you, right? This is the game, Paul, our show tries to cover the sport in its entirety. And this is a headline game. This is where the best story of the day is in terms of what's been accomplished on the field this season. And I don't think Kansas and Duke earlier merited a game day trip. But this does, because Kansas has remained undefeated. They've won a defensive game to show a little variety. And then what TCU did to Oklahoma Saturday, they just embarrassed them. So this is a headline game and probably top to bottom the most competitive conference in the country. And it's a great story with what Kansas has been able to do. Since 2008, Paul, prior to this year, they were 8-106 in Big 12 play. Let that sink in for a minute. They've already won more Big 12 games than they have in any season, I think, since then. It's a remarkable turnaround in a relatively short period of time, and it's worth going and checking it out on Saturday morning.
And you probably lost track of the number of times you've done college basketball game day in Lawrence.
I have, yeah.
You probably never thought you would be there for this. So interesting. Let me ask you about the game that nobody – well, I don't mean nobody's going to, but we were just talking to Ralph Russo. He was going to Tuscaloosa. Pretty much everyone was going. I mean, the number of tickets canceled and hotel reservations scrapped for Tuscaloosa probably has to be pretty enormous.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating thing, and it's sort of like this is a last gasp desperation moment for Texas A&M, because after all the stuff that happened in the offseason and all the things that were said both back and forth between Jimbo and Nick and the trash talking toward Will Anderson, and then to come out and play the way A&M has, this is one of the worst offenses in the country statistically and aesthetically. And if they come out and get housed, I mean, what does it say about the trajectory of where they're going? So this is a big moment. This is the backed into the corner, they have to fight moment. And I think that's what, as I was waiting to come on, I heard, a replay of Nick's rant from the news conference the other day. He's not talking to whoever the guy was that asked the question. He's talking to the players, because they know A&M has stunk it up to this point in the season. And everybody, as he said, gets well if they can beat Alabama, and certainly – certainly the health of Bryce Young's a big deal. The health of A&M's quarterback is a big deal. So it's sort of a last stand thing for A&M, because the season's already sideways. It could go into a full tailspin if they get blown out Saturday night.
Well, speaking of tailspins, there are always a couple of coaches who lose their jobs early for whatever reason. But lately, it just seems like it's reaching an epidemic state with the Paul Chryst dismissal the other day, which did surprise some people. I'm not certainly an expert on Wisconsin, but Reese, how much a part of the game is now talking about these type of things for your show and just the general college football conversation? We're in early October.
We're all fascinated by coaching searches. It's just sort of part of our human nature. It's sort of that prurient interest type of thing. You know, you're sort of a salacious detail. Are they going to fire him or are they not? Who are they going to go after? So it moves the needle. The ratings tell us that last year when we were talking about the USC coaching search, for instance, ratings ticked up. People are interested. So you have to be honest and genuine about it and accept that it's going to come. Where I think you should draw the line, at least in my judgment for our show and our sensibilities, absent someone doing something completely immoral or unethical, I don't really think it's our place to say this guy has to be fired because he's losing. I mean, now, if you reach an extreme, certainly that's fair game. But Paul Christ, just to use an example, was an embarrassing loss because of who it was to. It was to Brett Bielema, their former coach, acrimonious departure when he left Madison, couldn't stomach it. I don't think it's the right thing for our show to do to go on had they not fired him and say, they've got to fire Paul Christ. He lost to Brett Bielema. But you have to talk about the search, and Auburn's a great example right now. I mean, you and I have talked about this. It's an inevitable conclusion, so it's something that is a fair game to discuss, I think.
Yeah, and I think the situation with Auburn, it reminds me a little bit, Reese, of Scott Frost, where – you know it's going to happen. It almost becomes even more painful to discuss as opposed to a Jimbo situation where at some point, whether we talk about that on a serious level, it's just, you know, Harsin, it's really sad to see what that program is doing considering how well they play and then how they predictably fall apart.
Yeah, it is. Paul, he's a good coach. I mean, I think I've told you this. I've known Brian since he was the offensive coordinator at Boise State for Chris Peterson. I'm not sitting here saying we're best friends, we vacation together, but I've known him for quite some time, and I think him to be a good coach and a good person. And there are precious few coaches who transcend fit. He's not one of them. And, you know, there are guys who can come in anywhere and establish what they want to do and rally the troops and get everybody on board. He's not that guy, but he's an excellent coach. And if he gets another opportunity at Arizona State or Colorado or somewhere of that nature, I think he'll do great. I really do. But he's not the right fit there. He knows it. Everybody knows it. And they've undermined his chance to win everybody over. I'm sure there are a lot of rank-and-file fans that he's won over that don't like the way he was treated in the offseason and don't like the fact that people are rooting against him. So I'm sure there are a lot of the good, you know, average Auburn people who are really behind him. And I think that's admirable for them. They're supporting their team and their coach. But from a long-term perspective, the decision makers, it's not going to work out and they'll be moving on at the end of the season. But that doesn't stop Auburn from playing well. You're right. You know, that was an inexplicable decision, you know, deep in the red zone to run the trick play. It was like trying to outsmart them. And, you know, I like to use this thing a lot that Bob Knight told me years ago, dumb loses more than smart wins. And, you know, and I think when you make a play like that and try to show everybody, you know, you're going to trick them, you know, it can blow up on you. And they were already in trouble and it's sort of predictable in the way it wound up.
Finally, with Reese Davis, Reese at the top of the polls, it's interchangeable these days. As you look, especially at Georgia this week, it's 2 weeks in a row, and I know that they still won. But you know, what do you make out of the Dogs right now?
I'm not worried at all. I think they're sleepwalking. I think they know they're a lot better than these last two teams they've played, and they just haven't found the type of edge that Kirby Smart and really all of the players I'm sure would have liked going into those games to play at that level. They're still in that upper echelon easily. They can win the national championship again. Now, I did move them off the one line in my AP ballot this year or this week because you have to perform when you have three teams that are grouped together as closely as those three at the top are, in my judgment. So, you know, I felt like that the way Alabama won and the fact that they did it with a backup quarterback and they have a couple of road wins that probably are a little better in terms of resume than anything that Ohio State and Georgia have on the road, though Georgia probably has the single most impressive victory. So I moved Alabama back to number one this week and moved Georgia down.
Yeah, I'm the worst one here, but I'm sorry we all gave Oregon last rites Labor Day weekend.
It's not the truth. They look okay now. Bo's playing great too, and good for him. I'm happy to see that.
Great stuff from Reese Davis. Off to Kansas this week. Thank you, Reese. Appreciate it.
All right, Paul. I'll see you.
Great stuff with him, and the good news that Lee Corso back on the road again this weekend after a bit of a brief bout with illness on Saturday morning in Clemson. We are coming back. We still have a lot to do on the show. Stinchcomb later on, and other guests as well as we continue here on a Tuesday afternoon.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome all of you back. Let's continue. Ed is up next in Memphis. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Paul. I just want to thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Here in Memphis, we don't even get a paper on Saturdays. And the rest of the week, it's printed somewhere else out of town. So we're way behind everything, but thanks to you, we keep up pretty well.
Well, thank you very much. No, I was through there the other day, and I haven't lived there in a long time, but it's changed dramatically.
Sure. What I want to talk about is I'm 89 years old, and when I played football in college, these guys on these receivers, they're 10, 15 yards off of them. And when I was playing, we used to get right up on them, and they'd come off the line of scrimmage. We'd give them a little hand shiver on the shoulder pass to slow them down. But as I say, nowadays, these guys are playing so deep on defense. You know the old saying, when he's even, he's leaving.
Right.
And that's the truth. The defensive backs, you know, have to wait on these guys to get to them. And, of course, they're going full speed by the time they get there, and they just run by them like they're not even there. We never had anybody throw for 300 yards against us.
Where did you play, Ed?
I played at, it's the University of Central Arkansas now, but back then it was Arkansas State Teachers College.
Oh, okay. Is that where, I'm trying to remember, is that where Tommy Tuberville played?
I don't know. That's where Scottie Pippen played basketball.
Right.
And another thing, going back to old-time coaches, I know how fans today, you know, think their coaches are the best. Something I read a long time ago when Georgia and Georgia Tech were playing each other, the Georgia Tech fans would have signs saying, "In Dodd we trust."
Yeah.
And the Georgia fans would have signs saying, "You can't beat our butts."
Hey, by the way, that's funny. Tuberville played at Southern Arkansas.
Oh, did he? Yeah, that's at A&M. Magnolia, A&M now.
Got it. Well, listen, you take care of yourself. It's always a pleasure. You be well. Thank you very, very much for the call. Pat is in Georgia. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul, thanks. Hey, I remember those signs. I do. And we used to call Tech the North Avenue Trade School, and they'd call us Clark County Cow College back in those days. And Dodd owned Georgia back then, but that's not why I called. I'm afraid to ask you what you really said about Stetson Bennett, so I won't.
Well, I can tell you what I said because it's public record. I said I hope he can get things situated pretty quickly, or otherwise there will be a quarterback controversy at Georgia.
And I think that's the truth. I was happy to hear what Reese Davis had to say about Georgia. That soothes some of my feelings. I just speak for myself, but I don't think I'm a lone wolf in being a Georgia fan. You got to understand where we're coming from right now. And I think the world of Kirby Smart, I really do. And the nickname I've given him is one of fondness. It's not one of derision. You know, we like to think that we're back. And I was there in 80, so I can truly say we're back with the national championship. And we played so well, Oregon and South Carolina away game, and I just felt like we just didn't show up. And the Kirby's got to be able. He's a good communicator. Your take on that?
Yeah, Pat. I think it's a common malady in college football right now, and it's one reason why you see Saban get so uptight every week, especially for the big games, that players just, they listen too much to their friends, who listen too much to shows like this, who talk about games being won before they're ever played. And I think that happens. And I'm not about to give Missouri too much credit, okay? Because they're not that great. They can play well, and they played extremely well. And as others have said, they were able to cobble a couple of points on the board, and had they scored touchdowns, the game might have been out of reach. But you know, Georgia woke up too late. But
well,
too late for Missouri to be able to hang in. But Georgia was the better team. But I just don't think you expected it 2 weeks in a row. That's what was surprising to me. I expected it. I just didn't think it would happen again.
Well, I agree with you, and that's hopeful, too. I got another question. Can Auburn win another SEC game this year?
I'm trying to remember who else they have that's winnable. No, I don't think so.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, everything they have now, after Georgia, it's all SEC West. So they're not going to beat anybody in the SEC West.
Well, they might as well cut the cord.
I've talked to a few people about that, Pat, and you know, there's not a singular voice down there at the moment. So I think the fact they played well against LSU, it made it more frustrating. But if they walk into Athens this week and they're picking a terrible time to show up, and if this is a 51-7 game, then I think at that point you might want to pull the cord. But it really, the season can't be salvaged. It's over. It doesn't really matter. I know if you're a player's mom and dad, it matters. But from a realistic standpoint, Auburn is going to have a change, whether it's next week or the week after. The hunt is already on for the next coach. It's not about Brian Harsin's future. Drew is up next in Georgia. Hello, Drew.
Hey, Mr. Paul, y'all. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
And I was just listening to you talking to Pat earlier, you know, and I was just thinking, Paul, you think with the Carson thing at Auburn and him, you know, pretty much out, you think that's any influence on, like, Georgia's favored by 29? I've never saw that in my lifetime, Georgia-Auburn game, and either one favored that much.
No, I haven't crazy. Either. Betting lines are interesting. They're more than, you know, they're a perception, and then they become a reality because, I've explained this too many times, but yeah, I mean, if somebody thought it was such a sure thing, they would bet on Auburn.
That's right. I'm not a betting guy, but I got another tidbit too to throw at you. You know, you've been hearing, Paul, we've heard this, the Tennessee Volunteers, Rocky Top's back. But I looked up, you know, the combined record, the teams they played, they're 9-11, Paul. 9 wins, 11 losses. And what does Georgia Tech and Tennessee have in common this year? They both beat Pitt, which is an average team at 3-2. And Florida, look, I'm glad they won for Tennessee. They hadn't won that game. We know the record, all that. But we got to be honest, Florida's an average team. They are.
Well, and, yeah, and the other I agree. This week is so important for Tennessee because, I mean, LSU could be considered an average team too, but I think they'll get a little bit more credit for going on the road and beating LSU.
Yeah, that's true. They will. And also, just throw this out here, Tennessee's offense, which is awesome, I think they're ranked right now number one in the nation in yards, you know, yards a game. But their defense, here's their problem, 95th. Not 25th, 95th in the nation. That's the problem at Tennessee. Thank you, Paul, for my call.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm looking at Tennessee through a different scale. I didn't expect them to be in the playoffs this year. And it's the easiest thing in the world to say, well, you can't rule Tennessee out. No, you can't. And I think they've caught a tremendous break with a potentially banged up Bryce Young. But, yeah, that's a situation we just don't know about right now. And, you know, we're probably not going to know till Saturday night what his condition is. Let's check out Rick in Georgia. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Paul. First time caller. I'm so glad to be able to get through and talk to you.
Thank you.
I've really been enjoying your show these last few weeks. I've had the opportunity to be at home while you were on TV. I've listened to you a long time ago, but not as frequent. I just was not able to tune in as much, but I really have enjoyed it. You got a great show. And
thank you.
Like they were talking about the other day, a real unique show, and you do a tremendous job. I'm a big fan. I really would want to say something about it. I really enjoy some of these regular callers that you have, Paul. And like I said, I'm a huge Georgia fan. If you'll give me just a few seconds, I'll tell you a little bit why I'm such a big fan, and then I'll comment on the caller I was talking about. But my dad gave Wally, well, went in business with Wally Butts, and a lot of callers probably don't know who Wally Butts is, but I know you do.
Oh,
and,
sure.
I'm very, very familiar with him. But I was a teenager and had the opportunity to drive Coach Butts or to chauffeur him occasionally in the summertime up as a part-time job. He was in the credit on the Credit Life Insurance Company and sold to car dealers, new car dealers. So we'd drive down in through Georgia to Florida, all down to the end of Florida and back. And I just had the best time, you know, being around Coach Butts at that teenage years and listening to his stories and going into these car dealerships and all the car people, seeing him walk in back there, they would just rush out, you know, and want to talk to me about my experience with him. But that's sort of why I'm such a big Georgia fan. Even my dad went to Georgia. I've got a brother that went to Georgia. We used to get tickets from Coach Butts, like 40 or 50 tickets a game, you know, back when my dad was back in the late 60s, early 70s. But anyway, one of your callers, legend that comes that calls in, and I might get a lot of my Georgia people getting mad with me, but he is hilarious. I enjoy his call-ins probably more than anybody else. But I tell you, I'm afraid he's right about Georgia on a few things, and I'm just being realistic. I'm a huge Georgia fan, like I said, but, you know, Georgia's got some problems with the wideouts, and I think we got some hurt, maybe a couple of players hurt and different things. The running backs are not looking great. The offensive lines, you know, nothing looks really great unless we did against Oregon State and South Carolina. But I'm sort of like Reese Davis. I'm not really that concerned about Georgia. I think Georgia's got the talent. They definitely got the talent. I don't know how deep they are compared to last year. But I really think, and I'm not the only one that thinks this, I've heard Kirby talk about it a little bit, but, you know, if our young players going into a place like Missouri or any Southeastern Conference home, especially at night, and that place was going crazy, the players probably do have to, you know, last year's players, it might not have affected as much. But I think,
well, Rick,
the players,
if
really,
I could jump
know,
in here because we're late on time, that's exactly, I think, the concern that many had for Georgia, the inexperience. That experience becomes experience by the end of the season. We're heading to a break. We'll be right back.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
All of you back here. It's been a good show so far. It's been a busy week. Remember yesterday we had Brian Kelly on as they get ready, as Baton Rouge gets ready for the Vols this week. Chaz is up next in Alabama. Hello, Chaz.
Oh, hey. Hi, Paul. It's my first-time caller.
Wonderful.
And then I watch the show every day. And I got a question for you.
Okay.
I think Bama's going to win this Saturday.
Anything leading you to that conclusion?
Yes, sir. Roll Tide.
Oh, that's as good a way to sum it up as anybody. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Martell is up next in Tampa. Hello, Martell.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
Thank you.
The call with Reese Davis, I have to say, was phenomenal, and he took some of my talking points away, but I'll kind of move forward with that. When he says Brian Harsin being a good fit at Auburn, and I looked at the last six Auburn coaches, they've been in the SEC or either on the Auburn staff. Then I took it a step further and went back from Pat Dye forward and kind of looked at their coaching records. Auburn, as we know, we have streaks where we do great things. But when I look at the average wins and losses, most of these coaches, they average 8-3 or 8-4. So what makes a good fit for Auburn based on the power brokers that you and I know are running that program? And when will the plug, what does it take for Harsin to actually get that plug pulled? Because I watched him the last couple of weeks, and it's almost like he's coaching to say, Jimmy Rain, write me this check. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it takes a natural – there are two schools of thought. One is the bye week, which comes the week after next, where there's Georgia and Ole Miss. Why is that important? Well, it really isn't, because the season's already down the tubes. But there's a conventional wisdom in the world of athletic departments that it's a good breaking point where you fire the coach, you bring in somebody from his staff, and then you do the kumbaya speech. You know, we're not done yet. All we care about are these fine young men. So that's one school of thought. Another school of thought is just fire them after Saturday's game and be done with it and end the conversation. That's what I would do. I'm not being cruel about it. I'm just being, at some point, put somebody out of his misery. Let's quit kidding ourselves. The one thing, thankfully, you're not seeing here are fraudulent votes of confidence. you're not getting, and the reason why is there's not an athletic director. If you still had the previous athletic director, he would probably be out there saying, oh, we think Coach Harsin is doing a great job, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants to hear that. So you're hearing crickets out of the Auburn people. And I just think it's an old cliche, but when something becomes inevitable, just go ahead and do it. I remember Butch Jones years ago. I said, fire this guy. Everybody at Tennessee got mad. Why are you calling for somebody's firing? I wasn't really calling for his firing. I was just calling for him to be put out of his misery. And there's no reason to continue this facade. Saturday marks the midpoint of the season. Auburn will be, what, 3-3 after Saturday's game?
Correct.
Is that enough of a sample size? I think it is, considering that you still have Ole Miss in the top 10, you still have Alabama in the top 10, and all the other usual suspects.
Now, as bad as they wanted Kevin Steele, would he be a viable option after this change is made, even though he's on Mario Cristobal's staff currently, or would they kind of go for someone? I know Kevin is not the youngest guy out there, but are they looking for somebody?
I think Kevin Steele is well-liked, and he, to me, Kevin Steele was more of an interim coach for a couple of years to stop the bleeding. Let's bridge the gap here. Maybe they get on a run, maybe they don't. But Kevin Steele would have Auburn would be competitive right now under Kevin Steele in the degree that, you know, they would have probably be I think they would have lost to Penn State, but they would have beaten they would have won the other night, I think. So I don't think he's really a hot name at the moment. I think the two names that you keep hearing about are the names to keep your eyes on. That doesn't mean it won't change, because boosters are as vulnerable to the hot name as we are. So think about this for a second. Had Harsin been fired in February, and he was pretty close to it, Hugh Freeze, I think, would be the head coach right now. Now, you say, why Hugh Freeze? Because he was the easiest coach to hire. You couldn't have gone over to Ole Miss and hired Lane Kiffin in February. It just wouldn't be fair. But Hugh Freeze could have walked away more easily than Kiffin. So I think those are two names. I don't think those are the only two names. You'll see a lot of people paraded through the media, because that's just the way it works.
And last question for you. So I was watching the use of Tank Bigsby in the game. And when we get in certain situations, it's like Coach Harsin is pulling Tank out and putting some of the other guys in. Knowing the caliber and quality of player and what Tank can do and help with the team, had he been used more in the LSU game, especially in some of these crucial situations, do you think that outcome would have been different, or does it seem to be the swinging point of that game was when he tried that trick play? I personally think it was the trick play, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Martell, even though there's 100 plays in a game, the trick play is the one that people remember. And just like last year against Penn State, it was that, I think it was a fourth down play. I can't remember what the play was that was terrible. I like Tank Bigsby, but he hasn't been used correctly, because I just don't think that offensive line has enough going for it. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Fantastic questions. We are heading to a break right now. We still have a couple of guests, including Matt Stinchcomb, will drop by in the next hour. Back after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And Greg McElroy coming up here at the top of the hour. Matt Stinchcomb after that. Right now, the judgment expert, Ken Smithmeyer, joins us. Dr. Ken, how are you?
Hey, Paul, I'm good. So here's my theory on all these coaching changes. This is the Lance Leipold effect. I would argue that right now, Lance Leipold is the most influential coach in all of college football. And he is causing more coaches to be fired than Nick Saban ever did. You know, we always talked about coaches getting fired because they couldn't catch Nick, they couldn't beat Nick. I think ADs and college presidents recognize that Nick's the greatest of all time, and you might occasionally steal one from him, you know, like Georgia does or Clemson does, but you're not going to dethrone him. But you got Kansas, Paul, in Lawrence, Kansas, 5-0 with game day coming. And I guarantee you there are ADs and college presidents around the United States in Phoenix, Arizona State, in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, Boulder, Colorado, in Atlanta, one of the, you know, most dynamic cities that we've got at Georgia Tech, and now at Madison, where, you know, the Badgers routinely 8-4, 9-3, sometimes better than that. And they're saying somebody at Kansas is going 5-0. And I think that right now it is Leipold who is proving that in this day and age of the portal, if you're a good coach and you're a good talent evaluator, you can go in and you can turn a program around because the world has changed.
Okay,
and
so Ken, let me jump in here for a second, because I agree with what you're saying. We both know, though, that a lot of ADs have been burned on that hot coach, that Nova. So let me go to a different coach, one who is making the most money, who has the biggest buyout, and frankly limped into College Station, nearly limped out last year to rejoin his old boss, but he stayed because the school just made it impossible to leave. So give us your evaluation of Jimbo Fisher.
Well, you know, Paul, I'm not a football coach, but Bill Parcells always said, you are what your record says you are. And so right now, at least with a $100 million contract or whatever it is sitting at College Station, Jimbo's a little over 500, I think, you know, but I don't know, 8-4 average, something like that. Not $100 million worth. Mel Tucker's not proven to be $100 million worth this year. So I think the whole big contract issue, I have a feeling, is going to really come to a head here. Somewhere, some AD, some university is going to start putting a lid on that and use bonus plans, you know, win bonuses, things like that, where a guy make big money but not be guaranteed big money. But Jimbo right now, not proving it. Not proving it at all.
But Ken, why? I know that. Why not?
Well, I would, from what I see, Paul, he is a guy who is stuck in his way. And the world has changed. And Nick Saban rightfully always gets held up as an example of where he may have objected to the change. He didn't fight the change. He coped with it. He's coped with it with the portal. He's coped with it with his offensive system. That doesn't seem to be the case at Texas A&M. So you can admire the past. That's fine. But if you live in the past while the world is changing around you, then you're simply, you know, instead of being on the train, you're going to get run over by it. And I think that's exactly what's happening with Jimbo. For whatever reason, that guy, it's probably pride, arrogance, those would be the typical reasons, he is not willing to acknowledge that the world he's competing in is different than the world that he won his first national championship in.
Very interesting. And yeah, I think your point about the ADs is a good one, but I don't think it's going to happen because you still have a monopoly, and Ken, you have so much manipulation going on in the coaching carousel that very few people really have a good handle on it. And these ADs too often are concerned with their reputation in the moment than they are about a long-term business decision.
You do, Paul. I agree with all that. But, you know, every hot stock peaks at some point, right? It happens in the stock market. The coaches are a stock market. Schools are making investments on long term. And there's a point at which a market looks and says, boy, have we been stupid. And it starts to correct.
But Ken, I'm interrupting for the second time, but this has been going on for as long as I can remember.
Here's the difference, no, Paul. I think there's a difference, and I think the difference is these 10-year, $100 million contracts. I think the Jimbo contract, I think the Mel Tucker contract, to some degree the James Franklin contract, maybe the Brian Kelly contract, we don't know. I think those things are the things that have gone over the top by any reasonable standard. And I'm just telling you, I think that this is people, they're going to start looking at these investments in these guys and saying, there are good coaches out there that we can find. We can pay them very, very well. We can pay them an extra $500,000 for every game they win over six or something like that. They can make millions, but we're not given 10 years, $10 million. And now we'll see what Auburn does.
Makes that decision? Because the athletic directors really don't have a power base. How many times have we heard Jimbo Fisher does not have a boss. Nick Saban does not have a boss. Kirby Smart really doesn't have a boss.
Okay, but Jimbo doesn't have the boss because somebody gave him the contract. Nick and Kirby and probably Dabo don't have a boss because they've earned that contract.
Okay. I think that's fair.
That's the difference. And there's always going to be mistakes, Paul. I know that. Somebody's going to overpay.
But Ken, the athletic directors are I mean, can you name me an indispensable athletic director in this country?
No, there are no, we're all replaceable, Paul. No question.
But football coaches are not as easily replaceable, though, is my point.
No, they're not as easily replaceable. But I think as all the money escalates, as the NIL money escalates, I just personally believe that the 10-year, $10 million man is a limited time species in this industry. I'm just telling you.
Okay. Well, you may be right. And there are some industries where things like that come back. But I've never seen it in college football since we're into this about 30, almost we're into this for 40 years now, where the contracts have been exploding. We will take a short break. Greg McElroy joining us in a few minutes. Matt Stinch come later on, and your phone calls next.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.